entirely true. She cracked the cabinet door so she could keep an eye on the entrance to the suite.
What's going on, Letty?
Remember when I asked you what it would take for you to want to live?
Yeah.
And you said a new experience.
Right.
What if I could give you that, right now?
You could give me a new experience?
Yes.
I wasn't talking about sex, Letty. Much as I like you,
I'm not either.
So what are you talking about?
What kind of car did you drive out to Vegas?
Excuse me?
What kind of car did you drive here?
A Suburban. Why?
She felt her heart swell with hope, said, You really want a taste of something new? Something so far out of your realm of experience it's gonna blow your mind?
Yes, Letty.
Even if it's dangerous?
Especially.
Fast as you can, bring your Suburban over to the Wynn. I'm going to give you the phone number of a man named Isaiah. He'll tell you exactly what to do.
What is this, Letty?
Sure about this? All in. We're robbing the casino in less than 1 hour. Our driver is MIA. This is your chance to step in, take his place, and earn over $1 million for a night's work. The silence on the other end of the line went on and on. She could just hear the sound of the television bleeding through, some violent TV show or film, a man screaming through a gag. She said, Christian, you there?
Is this for real?
I swear to you. Look, I hate to pressure you, but our backs are against the wall. You ever see the movie Heat?
Sure, it's in my top 10.
Remember when De Niro goes to the diner and hires the black guy from the Allstate commercials to be his driver?
Yeah.
Remember how it's a right then and there, in or out, yes or no proposition?
I do.
Well, this is exactly like that. I need a yes or no right now, and before you answer, I have to be straight with you. This is beyond dangerous. If it all comes off the rails, you could be killed. If we're caught, you could go to prison for a long time. More silence. She said, Did I just totally call your bluff or what?
You called it. Damn, you called it. But you know what?
What?
It wasn't a bluff. No way.
Isaiah.
No way. He's a civilian.
So what? He knows how to drive, doesn't he? We aren't asking him to do hostage control.
And you've known him how long?
I met him when I lived in Charleston. 6 months.
You gotta be kidding me. What's he doing in Vegas?
He lost his family recently. He's suicidal. Nothing to live for.
These are selling points?
You want this money or not, Isaiah? How many shots come along in your lifetime to make a score like this? Finally, a pause. She could almost hear the gears turning. Said, It's 1:44, Isaiah. Someone's coming through that door any minute now, and you know it.
Bringing somebody in I never worked with, never heard of, this late in the game, this big of a job, no scanners, no radio, we'll be blind.
What other options do we have? It's this or walk away right now.
You're right. You're right.
So you want to walk away? Pack up all your toys and go home? Silence. She said, Am I sitting tight or coming back down? At 1:57 a.m., she heard the electronic chiming of the door's locking mechanism. Her legs had gone numb 10 minutes ago, a pins and needles sensation sparkling from her hips down to her toes. The discomfort vanished. The lights flicked on. Letty cracked the cabinet door open just a sliver. A suited man with a shaved head and neatly trimmed goatee had entered. He was built like a vending machine, carried a MAC-10 with a long magazine and suppressor, the machine pistol dangling from a shoulder strap. He glanced into the powder room, the massage room, walked past the dining table, then turned, moving toward Letty's cabinet. She let her door close fully, listening as his wingtip sank into the plush carpet, his wool pants swishing. She caught a whiff of overbearing cologne. Finally dared to breathe again when his footsteps trailed off toward the bedroom. She lifted her phone, banged out a text to Isaiah as the man's footfalls echoed off the marble in the bathroom. One man just entered, doing walkthrough. Isaiah responded in her headset.
Copy that. Just be cool.
The man emerged from the bedroom and walked into the living room. He lifted the shoulder strap over his head and set the machine pistol on the glass-topped coffee table. Tugged a small radio from an inner pocket in his jacket, said,
Clear,
30 seconds later, that electronic chiming repeated. There was enough noise as the men entered for Letty to whisper into her microphone,
"Eyes, can you hear me?"
"Loud and clear."
She whispered, "3, make that 4 men have just entered."
"In addition to the first guy?"
"Yeah, 5 total, all armed, shotguns, machine guns, pistols, and still more are coming, a whole line of them."
"All muscle?"
"No, they're pushing carts."
"What's on the carts?"
"Cages, covered in wire mesh."
"Our money?"
She liked the sound of that. Said, "Oh my God."
"What?"
"I've just never seen so much. That makes 6 carts they rolled in here."
"Is it our money?"
"Oh yeah, and there's a shit ton of it. 2 more guards have entered."
"7 total."
"You guys can handle 7, right?" The cart pushers departed, leaving the 6 carts grouped near the dining area. The front door closed. A man armed with a subcompact Glock took a post by the entrance. The other 6 retired to sofas in the living room. One of them spoke into a radio.
"We're in. Locked down. All secure."
Letty whispered, "They're getting settled. 1 man is standing by the door. The other 6 are in the living area. Wait." One of the men stood. He moved over to the carts, and on top of one of them placed a small device mounted to a tripod. It began to revolve slowly.
"What's happening?"
Isaiah asked. "Not sure yet. Stand by." The man pressed a button on the device, said into his radio,
"Visual installed. Confirm."
As he returned to the sofa, Letty said, "They set up a camera. It turns, takes in the entire room."
"It's okay. We planned for this contingency."
"So what happens now?"
"Sit tight."
The radio silence unnerved her. The pain in her legs was back with a vengeance. Through the crack between the door and the cabinet, she watched the guards. Everyone black-suited, none younger than 30, none older than 45, each exuding his own special brand of ex-military, fucked by life hardness. 2 of the men chatted about an upcoming fight at Caesar's. 1 just stared. Another took laps around the room. She startled when Isaiah came through her earpiece. He said,
"Report."
1 guard is still by the door, 5 seated in the living area, 1 on his feet near the TV.
"Have they been making regular trips into the bedroom or bathroom?"
"Just once."
"Are the curtains still drawn?"
"Yes."
"Perfect. How you feeling?"
"Scared."
"It's showtime."
"Even with the camera rolling?"
"Yes. When I say go, I want you to climb out of the cabinet, let them see you, distract them, engage them, just don't get yourself shot."
"How much time do you need?"
10, maybe 15 seconds.
Her heart rate tripled. She began to perspire. Heard Isaiah say,
"Stu, Jared, 10 seconds.
And then,
"Letitia."
"Yes?"
"You got your head on straight for this?"
"Absolutely."
"Because the next hour is going to take a few years off your life."
"I'll bill you for the Botox." There was a 4-second pause, and then Isaiah said,
"Go."
17. Letty tugged down her Barbie Halloween mask. Her iPhone lit up with a text as she reached for the door. "Christian. Never in my life felt so alive, thank you." She nudged the door open and crawled out of the cabinet onto the carpet. No one saw her. She slipped out of sight behind the bar, made herself take 3 deep breaths, flooding her lungs with oxygen. She tried to stand, but her legs were still numb. Frantically, she squeezed her calves. The tingling burn of sensation roared back. Up onto her feet, got her elbows on the granite bar. For what seemed like ages, nothing happened. She couldn't see the guard by the entrance, but the 6 men in the living room carried on just as before. She opened her mouth. The words fell out. "What a sausage fest. Could I get any of you gentlemen a drink?" The air went out of the room. 6 heads turning. The 7th guard stepping out from the entranceway with an expression of pure disbelief spreading across his face. 3 men were already on their feet, reaching for weapons, the others rising. Someone said,
"How the hell?"
Letty said, "I sort of come with the room." The tallest, oldest of the bunch stepped forward and trained his Glock on the center of her chest. Thank God, he was blocking the camera from seeing her.
He said,
How did you get into this room?
Did you not just hear me?
You have no idea the world of shit you have just brought down on yourself.
Letty smiled through the mask, making sure to keep her hands visible and still. Worlds of shit are all I know, dude. She couldn't be sure, but she thought she heard the faintest sound coming through the wall, something sliding across the bathroom floor. In her ear, Isaiah whispered through a strained voice,
Keep him talking, we're almost in.
She said, Are you sure you don't want that drink? Gotta be honest, y'all seem a little tense. The man glanced at the wide load who had been on the door.
You were first in, asshole. Where'd she come from? I checked everywhere. Really?
He came another step forward, Letty growing increasingly uneasy with that black hole of death staring her down. Wasn't the first time, but you never got used to it. The difference between you being here and not, just the smallest movement of a finger. Isaiah said,
Letty, get down.
She dropped. By the time she hit the carpet, the lights had gone out. Instinct drove her to cover her head with her arms. She heard confused shouting, footfalls on carpet, bursts of suppressed submachine gun fire, rounds chewing through the drywall. Then the sound of snapping filled the room, interspersed with the shuck-shuck of shotguns pumping, more snapping, men screaming. Isaiah's voice,
Go, go, go!
Jared,
hit him again!
Men groaning, struggling against the electrical current. Stu said,
Lights back in 10, disable the camera.
Jared,
it's toast.
Letty sat up, grabbed hold of the edge of the bar, and hauled herself back onto her feet. Isaiah said,
Everyone secure?
Yep.
Yes.
Stu said,
5 seconds, remove goggles.
Done.
Done. 3, 2, 1.
The lights returned. What a difference 30 seconds had made. Letty said, Color me impressed. 6 of the 7 guards lay on their stomachs, hog-tied with zip ties, twitching with the remnants of taser shock. The barbed electrodes were still embedded in their chests, the propulsion cartridges dangling by wires. Stu and Jared straddled 2 of the men, tightening ball gags around the backs of their heads. Isaiah sat on the chest of the 7th, who wasn't gagged. Eyes held a radio in one hand, a Fairbairn Sykes in the other, the knife point digging under the man's right eye. Letty's crew looked more like mercs than thieves, outfitted in close-fitting night camo, night vision goggles hanging from their necks, super 90s strapped to their backs, all wearing neoprene face masks screen-printed with demonic-looking clown faces. Isaiah said to the guard pinned under his weight,
Tell them the camera shorted out and to send someone up with a spare. I double-dog dare you to try a goddamn thing.
The man nodded. Isaiah clicked talk.
Hey, it's Matt, over. Copy, we lost visual, over.
Letty walked out from behind the bar into the living room.
Yeah, the camera crapped out. Send up a new one. Copy that, en route.
Isaiah set the radio down on the carpet.
Very good, Matt. You'll never make it out,
Matt said.
Not in a million years. Well, if it was easy, any old goon could do it. Maybe even you.
Stu had moved over to the cages.
What do you see, my man?
Isaiah asked.
4-jaw independent chuck, top reversible D4 cam lock. Same on each cage?
Yep.
This happy news or bad news?
Stu said,
It's just news, nothing I didn't plan for.
He reached into his pocket and tossed Isaiah a chunk of gray metal the size of a chalkboard eraser.
Stick that magnet under the doorknob.
Stu hurried off toward the bedroom. Jared followed. The guards lay still on the floor all around them, just panting now. With the red ball gags in their mouths, they reminded Letty of roasting pigs. She glanced back at the wall behind her, a spray pattern, 2 dozen holes arced up toward the ceiling. Isaiah gagged his man and stood. He headed to the entrance, glanced through the peephole. Stu and Jared returned, Jared toting the empty duffel bags under one arm, Stu carrying a small, beefy drill. He hit the first cage, had the lock drilled out and off in less than 45 seconds. Jared glanced at Letty, said,
Shall we?
He pulled open the door to the first cage. Letty reached in, both hands grabbing crisp stacks of hundreds bound with black wrappers. On each wrapper, 10,000 had been printed in gold. The cube of money was 20 stacks high, 25 stacks per story. $5 million per cart. 6 carts. $30 million, give or take. something so satisfying about dropping them into the duffel, the smell of ink and paper filling the room. Letty could feel the eyes of the guards on her as she worked. Stu was already through the third lock, and she and Jared had nearly filled the second duffel.
"Report," Isaiah called from the door. "Cruising, brother," Stu said. "What's our time in?" 2:55.
Jared zipped the first two duffels, pushed them aside. They started in on the third cage. Aside from the whine of the drill, they worked with quiet intensity. The minutes whirred past with a staggering paradox of speed and timelessness. So much adrenaline raging through Letty's system, it felt like they'd been in this room for hours. Stu drilled out the last lock. Then he lifted something that resembled a TSA wand and started moving it slowly over the duffel bags.
"We got company," Isaiah said. "One guy."
"Need an assist?" Jared asked.
"What are you implying, brother?"
"Armed?"
"Just stay on task. I got this."
There was a knock at the door. Letty looked up. Would have missed the entire thing if she'd blinked. Isaiah opened the door, dragged a good-looking Latino into the suite, and turned his lights out with an elbow strike. 10 seconds later, the man was bound and gagged with the rest of them. Isaiah jogged over as Stu was wanding the last cage.
"We happy?"
"Yeah, none of the cash is chipped."
"What does that mean?" Letty asked.
"It means they can't track it."
Letty packed the last armful of stacks into a duffel and zipped it up. Isaiah, Stu, and Jared had already carried most of the bags into the bathroom. Letty tried to lift one, but it didn't weigh much less than she did. It was all she could do to drag it across the carpet. Halfway to the bedroom, she heard the guard's radio. A man's voice, deep, raspy.
"Matt, did your camera show up? Over."
Letty dropped the duffel, rushed back. She turned Matt over, unfastened his ball gag, and grabbed the radio. The closest weapon was a MAC-10 lying on the coffee table. She grabbed it, held it under the man's chin.
"Matt, do you copy? Over."
She said, "Tell him he just showed up and that you'll be back online momentarily. Say just those exact words."
"Letty, what's up?"
Isaiah from the bedroom. She held up her finger, stared straight into Matt's eyes, saw plenty of steel there, but some fear too. Hopefully enough. As she held the radio to his mouth, it suddenly occurred to her what she was doing, that she was threatening a man with his life. Of course, she wouldn't pull the trigger if he sold them out, but still, a line had appeared, and she'd crossed it. Without hesitation, pure reaction, her first armed robbery. "You have no choice. You have to get out of this hotel right now." Matt spoke into the radio.
"He just showed up. We're installing it now. Be back online momentarily. Over." "Copy that."
She took the radio and bolted back into the bedroom. The duffels were gone, and Jared was just lowering himself down through the crawlspace. She stopped at the edge of the gaping hole and got down onto her knees. Isaiah gave her a hand over the lip of the marble. She found her footing in the crawlspace, the urge to be out of this mess, out of this hotel, this city, overpowering. A sense of panic, of time running out, enveloping her. Then she was climbing down the ladder into room 968, listening to the marble slab slide back into place. The soles of Isaiah's tactical boots descended toward her as he maneuvered through the ductwork. 18. It took Letty 4 tries to get her left leg through the harness, Isaiah watching her from the window. He said,
"You gotta lock that shit down."
"Lock what down?"
"Your panic."
Stu had rappelled out the window 4 minutes ago, Jared right on his heels. Now Eyes had the last 3 duffel bags on belay, smoothly lowering 250 pounds of cash, $12 million, to the convention center roof. The radio crackled again. A rod of tension shot through Letty's entire body. Isaiah unclipped his locking carabiner from his harness and moved over to the bed.
"Matt, we still have no visual. Over."
Isaiah lifted the radio, pulled off a passable impersonation.
"This one doesn't work either. Over." "Are you messing with me? Over." "Nope. Over." "I'm bringing one up personally. Over." "Copy that. See you in 5.
Isaiah said,
"Now you can panic."
He grabbed her harness, gave it a hard tug.
"Ever rappelled before?"
"No." She could feel a wave of nausea coming on.
"Easiest thing in the world."
"I'm sure." As they approached the gaping hole in the window, Letty felt the night heat of Vegas and the smell of the strip and the desert ripping through, sage and car and restaurant exhaust. Isaiah had rigged a sophisticated anchor system of webbing to the bed frame. "I don't want to die," Letty said. A black rope had been halved and thrown out the window.
"Go ahead, look," Isaiah said. "You need to see where you're going."
She edged up to the glass, poked her head through. Oh, Jesus Christ. Stomach swirling, body in full revolt against this. Stu and Jared the size of Lego men far below. The curve of the building a dizzying mindfuck. "We should have gone over this before," Letty said. Isaiah grabbed her belay device, threaded the rope through, then locked everything into the carabiner on her harness. "I'm scared," she said.
"I hear that. But personally, I'd rather fall and die than be in this room when hotel security bursts through. You feel me?"
She nodded. He grabbed her hands, put her left on the rope near the belay device, her right on the rope farther back.
"This belay device is your friend. You'll break. When the rope is back here,"
he touched her right hand to her hip,
"you won't move. When you raise it up, it'll allow the rope to feed through. You'll drop."
Her heart was going like mad.
"Do not let your left hand get too close to the belay device. It'll chew it up. You'll let go and die."
The radio crackled.
"On my way, Matt. Say, did you ever send Mario down? He never showed. Isn't responding. Over."
Isaiah said,
"Look in my eyes."
She did.
"You go down in a sitting position. Control your speed."
"I can't do this."
"You have to do this."
He helped her up onto the lip of the glass. "I can't," she said.
"You've been through worse than this. Put your right hand in the brake position."
She clutched it, held it to her hip.
"You ain't gotta squeeze so hard. Relax. Now lean back."
"I can't."
"Stop saying that." "Matt, do you copy? Over." "Lean back."
She hung her ass out over the gaping darkness, her stomach turning itself inside out.
"Now raise your right hand slowly until you feel the rope begin to glide through the belay device."
"I
do it." "Matt, do you copy? Over."
She raised the rope off her hip. Isaiah smiled at her from inside the room, said,
"There you go. Now let it slide through your grasp, but not too fast."
She opened her fingers, felt the rope move through. She dropped a foot.
"Keep it going,"
Isaiah said.
"And I hate to rush you, but I do need you to hurry the fuck up."
She descended in erratic bursts, the sensation of plummeting to her death never out of her mind. 20 feet below their window, she lowered past a room where the curtains had not been drawn, glimpsed a couple watching television in bed less than 10 feet away, their faces awash in high-def glow. She ventured a glimpse down, surprised to see that she was already halfway to the ground. Lifting her right hand as far off her hip as she'd yet dared, she felt the rope streaming through her loosened grasp. The balls of her feet bounced off the windows. For a fraction of a second, it was almost fun. She touched solid ground, her legs buckling, relief blazing through her veins. Jared caught her before she fell. They stood at the edge of a field of commercial AC units that were noisy as turboprops. He unscrewed her locking carabiner, ripped the rest of the rope through her belay device, and said,
"She's down, Eyes. Let's blow."
Letty looked around, too dark to see much of anything beyond the fact that Stu and all but two of the bags were gone. She was about to ask where he was when Isaiah hit the ground beside her. She said,
"Wow, you've done that a few times."
"Once or twice."
The men shouldered the last two duffels. Jared led the way, threading between the roaring AC vents.
"How much time do we have?" Letty asked as they ran.
"They know something's up, but we magnetized the lock in the suite. No keycard will get them through. Yelling for someone to let them in won't get them through. They'll have to break it down."
"And then?"
She was having to shout to be heard.
"I don't know,"
he said.
"The guards saw us go through the bedroom and disappear. I moved the marble quietly, but I'm guessing they'll connect the dots in a hurry, or else someone else will spot us on this rooftop."
"Cameras up here?"
"Possibly. Whether or not they catch us at this point will depend on how quickly they can lock down all exits from the property, and if they've conceived of a theft like this."
They climbed over a 4-foot wall. Jared said,
"Almost there."
Letty spotted the shadow of Stu up ahead. They reached him. Isaiah and Jared let the bags slough off their shoulders. She peered over the ledge. The wall dropped 6 feet to the top level of a parking deck. A white Suburban idled below, the rear cargo doors thrown open.
The parking deck was well lit, inhabited by a smattering of vehicles, but otherwise still and quiet.
Your boy showed,
Isaiah said. He looked at Jared and Stu, said,
Home stretch. There will be cameras. Move like the wind, gentlemen.
He hoisted a bag, swung it over the ledge, let it fall to the concrete on the other side. The remaining bags followed, then the men. Then Letty, climbing over last, letting her feet hang for a beat before dropping. The Suburban's rear seating had been removed. Stu loaded the final duffel as Letty hurried around the back and climbed up into the front passenger seat. She pulled off her mask and smiled at Christian.
Good to see you again, he said.
Eyes and his crew piled in, doors slamming. Isaiah said,
Christian, glad you could make it.
Christian shifted into gear.
Where to? 95 North.
Christian drove down the ramp into the parking garage, a tense silence descending over the car. After the second overly hard turn, Isaiah said,
Just drive cool, my man. This ain't the movies. No one's chasing us yet.
Letty checked her iPhone. 2:23. Hard to believe that only 23 minutes had elapsed since the guards had walked into that suite. She'd worried enough in that time span for three lifetimes. Each corner Christian turned ratcheted the knot in her stomach a little tighter. Her hands trembled. She tried to steady them, but she was too amped. She looked over, studied Christian. You all right? She asked. He nodded, but he looked scared as hell. The road out of the garage seemed to go on forever, like the Penrose stairs. Turn, after turn, after turn. Letty stared out the window, watching all the paint jobs of the cars gleaming under the harsh light. Something reached her through the glass. She lowered her window 2 inches. There it was, the screech of tires across smooth concrete. She said, Someone's coming up fast. Jared said,
Eyes, should he pull into an open space, let them pass? Hell no. All likelihood they got a vehicle description. We need to get the fuck out. Just drive, my man, and try not to crash.
The screeching drew closer. Letty heard Isaiah's glass hum down, turned just in time to see him climbing up onto his knees, pointing an AR-15 through his window. She buckled her seatbelt. Christian took a hard, squealing turn. A black Escalade ripped into view. Isaiah opened up. Three bursts on full auto, a smear of silver-rimmed holes starring the engine and the driver's side door of the Escalade. Its right front tire blew. Christian gunned the Suburban, its back end jutting left, smashing into the side of the Escalade as it passed.
Down!
Isaiah screamed. The back window of the Suburban exploded in a splash of safety glass, bullets chinking into the cargo doors. Christian cranked it around one last curve. Letty saw it first, a black strip lying across the exit lane up ahead.
Spikes! She yelled. Other lane!
Christian steered over a 6-inch concrete median with a violent shudder that seemed to tear apart the undercarriage. The entrance gate snapped off as they punched through and made a hard, blind turn into traffic. They accelerated down Las Vegas Boulevard, the strip still rocking at 2:30 in the morning.
Nicely done, Isaiah said. Now hang a left at the next intersection.
Letty glanced back. Traffic moved slowly, but there was plenty of it. The curve of the wind fell away. She heard frantic honking, accompanied by a symphony of sirens. Several SUVs a few hundred yards back were fighting their way through traffic with little success.
Radio and scanner would be nice, Stu said. Doing the best we can, brother.
Letty said, They'll put out a description of the Suburban, right?
APB, no doubt.
They lucked out, caught a protected green arrow at the next intersection. Christian turned onto Desert Inn Road. Compared to the strip, this street was practically vacant. Christian said,
Should I speed or just, Hell yes, speed. We just knocked over a casino, son.
The man pushed the gas pedal into the floor. They screamed past a vacant lot where a new hotel was in its foundational infancy. Then Trump Tower.
Let's get off the beaten path, Isaiah said. Any particular direction? Just keep us moving north.
They drove residential streets, dead quiet at this hour. Isaiah said,
Now you keep it under control. Only drive like a maniac if you see the po-po coming.
Letty leaned against the glass, tried to steady her rampant pulse, but it wouldn't slow. They hadn't just robbed at gunpoint. She'd been part of a crew that had fired on casino security. Isaiah could have killed the driver, and if the cops showed, tried to take them down, was there any doubt that a gunfight of epic proportions would ensue? How did you let it get this far? Because I needed it to. Are you really this person, Letitia Dobesh? She smiled. Because she was. Because she loved it. 19. On the edge of town, Isaiah directed Christian into the boondocks of a Walmart Supercenter parking lot. It was surprisingly busy considering the hour. This far out from the epicenter of Save Money, Live Better land was the territory of Winnebagos, car campers, and one U-Haul, specifically a 4x8 trailer already rigged to the towing package of a car that had piqued Letty's fear several days ago in Arizona, Isaiah's Black Tundra. Letty climbed out and raised the door. The four men had the trailer loaded inside of 30 seconds. They hit US 95 at 3 a.m., blasted north, Isaiah driving. By 3:15, the suburban sprawl had begun to relent, patches of lightless, unsettled desert scrolling past with greater frequency. The glow of the strip dwindled in the rearview mirror, the sky trading the absurdity of the Vegas skyline for honest-to-God stars. Even 40 miles out of town, no one spoke, as if their success up to this moment hinged upon a collective silence. By 4 o'clock in the morning, they were tearing through a landscape that looked ready-made for missile testing. Scorched earth, joyless mountains, no trees, snakeskin country. It was Isaiah who finally broke the silence. Said,
Christian, I'd roll with you again. You are absolutely badass.
Letty looked back, saw Christian smirking.
And you, Letty?
Isaiah said. She could hear the celebration beginning to build in his voice.
Wasn't for you, we wouldn't be here.
She said, I told Christian he'd make at least $1 million.
Nope,
Isaiah said.
My man stepped up on a moment's notice, saved the day. Let's call it 1.5. How you guys know each other back wherever you from?
He's my therapist.
No, seriously.
They rode toward Death Valley under a star-blown sky. Letty's adrenaline charge had tapped out. She hadn't been this dog-tired since the birth of her son. Eyes turned off the highway. For several miles, they bumped along a one-lane road that snaked through the creosote. The stars had just begun to fade and the sky to draw color when Letty spotted structures in the distance. The road curved toward a collection of buildings. At first, she mistook them for a town, but on approach, she saw they were nothing but skeletons, broken framework profiled against the sky. Isaiah eased to a stop in front of the remnants of a 3-story building. The only part still standing was its facade. The rest had been reduced to crumbling mortar. Eyes killed the engine. The silence that flooded in was graveyard quiet. Through the dusty windshield, Letty spotted 4 cars parked a little ways down the road. Whose are those? She asked.
Ours,
Isaiah said.
They're just rentals. I figured we'd split the dough here, go our separate ways.
Christian was sitting in the back between Stu and Jared. He cleared his throat, said,
You're absolutely sure we're safe here?
Isaiah glanced back between the front seats.
US 95 South, US 93 South, I-15 South, I-15 North, US 93 North, US 95 North, 6 main arteries out of Vegas. They're looking for a vehicle that matches your white Suburban. They will check every motel and hotel within 3 or 4 hours, which is why we aren't taking that chance. Why don't you let the professionals do the thinking, my man? You're in good hands.
They climbed out. It was almost cold in the desert ghost town. No wind. Letty glanced back the way they'd come, the dust trail of their passage beginning to settle. Everywhere she looked, emptiness. Isaiah walked out into the middle of the road. He stared off at the distant hills, then laughed, long and low. Jared and Stu moved toward him, and as he turned, the trio embraced. A fierce, sudden, emotional huddle.
I'm so proud. We did it, boys. We did it. They're gonna make movies about us.
Yeah, Christian said,
and with a big surprise ending.
Letty looked across the hood of Isa's Tundra.
It took her a second to process Christian standing in the road with an AR-15 pulled snug against his shoulder, sighting down the Marines.
"Gentlemen," he said, "raise your hands and get down on your knees."
Isaiah's head tilted.
"What the fuck?"
The gunshot exploded across the desert, the round punching through the windshield of one of the rentals.
"Next shot goes through your eyes.
Isaiah, Stu, and Jared exchanged glances. They slowly lifted their arms, got down on their knees.
"Join them, Letty."
"What are you doing, Christian?"
"You're going to make me kill somebody, aren't you?"
She moved around the front of the car.
"Christian,"
Isaiah said.
"You want more money? An even split? We can do that. This hard bargaining shit ain't necessary. We're reasonable men."
Letty eased down into the dirt.
"Your offer of $1.5 million was generous, but I think I'll have to settle for everything. Where are the keys to the Tundra, Isaiah?"
"Ignition."
"Where are the keys to the rentals?"
"Center console."
Christian fired 8 shots in rapid succession. Letty heard the air hissing out of the tires of the cars behind them.
"Everyone flat on your stomach, spread out your hands."
"I'll find you,"
Isaiah said. Christian backed away, keeping the gun on them as he approached the driver's side door of the Tundra.
"I could kill you all right here, leave you in the desert. Perhaps you should be thanking me for allowing you to live instead of making empty threats."
"Nothing empty about them, my man."
"Christian, please," Letty said.
"Thank me, Eyes,"
Christian said.
"Fuck you. Thank me or you die right now."
"Thank you,"
Isaiah said through gritted teeth.
"You're welcome."
Letty watched as Christian opened the door. Isaiah said under his breath,
"Anybody packing?"
"No. No,"
Jared said.
"I can get there. I can stop this."
"He can shoot,"
Isaiah said,
"in case you missed the part where he went 8 for 8 on those tires."
Christian reached into the car. He cranked the engine. Isaiah said,
"I ain't believing this shit."
Christian jumped in, slammed the door, the engine revving. The Tundra lurched toward them. Letty didn't even have time to get to her feet, just rolled out of the way as the tires slung rocks and dirt, the rubber tread passing inches from her head. She sat up, coughing, wiping dust out of her eyes. Isaiah's Tundra sped off down the dirt road, taillight shrinking into the dawn. Isaiah jumped to his feet, sprinted 20 yards. He planted his feet and screamed at the sky, his voice racing across the wasted landscape, ricocheting between the buildings in the ghost town. He turned and started back toward the group, toward Letty. When he was 10 feet away, she noticed the knife in his hand. "Isaiah, please." She scrambled to her feet, backpedaling.
"You,"
he said.
"You did this."
"I don't know what you're talking about."
"You brought Christian in."
"I had no idea." He rushed her, swept her off her feet. She struck the ground hard enough to drive the air out of her lungs. Isaiah, all 220 pounds of him, perched on her chest, his knees pinning her arms to the hard pan. He dug the knife point into her face.
"I ought to carve you up right here, leave you for the buzzards."
"I didn't."
"Where did you find him?"
"I told you, he was my therapist. I ran into him at the palazzo. He was suicidal, had lost his family several months ago. He told me he'd come to Vegas to kill himself." Isaiah leaned in close.
"What else do you know about him?"
"Nothing. I only saw him in sessions."
"You think he shoots like a shrink? That he drives getaway like a shrink?"
"I'm more stunned than you are, Eyes, I swear to you. I told that man my darkest secrets for 6 months."
"Something ain't right here."
He drew the blade softly across her throat.
"I'll find him,"
Isaiah said.
"And when I do, me and Christian will have a talk. He will tell me all of his secrets. If I find out..."
"You won't, because I didn't. If you want to kill me because I got played, go for it. But I'd never sell my partners down the river." Isaiah pushed the blade against her carotid. Stu and Jared had wandered over. They stood behind Isaiah, staring down at her.
"What do you think, boys?"
he asked.
"Feel like watching her bleed?"
20. Letty walked alone down the dirt road away from the ghost town, back toward the highway. Isaiah, Stu, and Jared had gone ahead. She couldn't see them anymore. The sun crested a range of barren hills. The desert went supernova. She walked on, shoes scraping dirt. Buzzards circled. With each step, she became more thirsty, more exhausted, more humiliated. Occasionally, blinding silver specks would streak across the far horizon. It was the highway, still miles away. The sun was high by the time she reached the pavement, beating down with a kind of angry purpose. There was no sign of Isaiah and the boys. Sweat poured out of her. She walked 20 feet down the road, and then her legs failed. She dropped, sat down in the dirt, stunned, crushed, confused, enraged, still trying to process what had happened. If she wasn't mistaken, it was 4 or 5 miles back to Beatty, the last town they'd passed through, but she was in no condition to make the trek. She'd left her purse and iPhone in Isa's Tundra, had a $20 bill shoved down one of her socks, but not another penny, credit card, or form of identification to her name. There was nothing coming in either direction. The heat wafting off the blacktop like a furnace. Scorpions watching her from the shade. She couched her face between her knees and shut her eyes. The sound of an approaching car brought her head up. For a moment, she didn't know where she was. She hoisted her arm into the air and raised her thumb. A Prius screamed past, kept going. The sun bore down from directly overhead, and she could feel herself beginning to come apart. You have to get up. You have to walk to town. You cannot just sit here and wait for a good Samaritan to stop, because they don't exist anymore. She walked up the shoulder of the highway, swatting at the swarm of flies and gnats that had been attracted by her salt-tinged sweat. In the distance, the mini roar of an engine. She looked up. Couldn't see anything through the brutal glare, just blinding chrome and glass. Thinking, if I took my top off, would they stop? Could you handle that rejection if they didn't? She raised her arm, held out her thumb, but didn't slow her pace. Kept walking as she shielded her eyes. The car streaked past. She traded her thumb for a middle finger. But something was different with this one. The pitch of its engine had dropped. She stopped. Made a slow, staggering turn. Damn, somebody had actually pulled over. She stumbled toward the vehicle, moving as fast as she could manage, some part of her fearing that as she drew near, it would turn into a mirage. But the image held. A burgundy Chevy Astro with deeply tinted windows. She sidled up to the van's front passenger door, yanked it open, climbed up into the seat. The air conditioning was crisp and roaring out of the vents. She looked over at the driver, her head spinning, unwieldy, said, I can't thank you. At first, she thought she was hallucinating, the symptom of heat stroke and exhaustion. But when he spoke, the voice matched the face. Christian said, Shut the door, would you? You're letting all the cold out. When she didn't respond, he reached across her lap and pulled the door closed himself. The desert raced by. Christian reached down, grabbed a bottled water from between the seats, dropped it into her lap.
Glad you were still here, he said. I swapped out Isaiah's car as fast as I could, but it took longer than I'd planned.
She unscrewed the water and sucked it down. Still cold enough to trigger a brief, blinding headache, but she didn't care. The thirst quench was orgasmic.
There's a whole case, he said. Help yourself.
She killed two more, leaned back in her seat. They were speeding along on a descending grade, the temperature readout passing the 110 mark. The desert looked more hostile and unforgiving with each passing mile, like a lifeless planet, like that painting in Christian's office. The hydration and the AC were going a long way toward clearing her head. She looked over at Christian. He'd changed. Maybe others wouldn't have noticed, but to her, a student of body language, it was like riding with a completely different man. He sat straighter, his shoulders implied confidence and ability, and there was a hardness in his face that hadn't ever been there before. He said,
Your pride is wounded, as it should be, but you should know something.
What's that?
I am the very best in the world at what I do. The game was over before it ever started. It was like a middle school kid trying to compete in the PGA championship.
Are you even a therapist?
Read a couple books. But it wouldn't be fair to say I had a practice, or a diploma. You were my only client.
How the hell did you do this?
And why?
You first fell on my radar while you were still in prison. Friend mentioned you to me. Your work with Javier Estrada and John Fitch in the Keys was very impressive. Even then, I wanted to work with you, but I worried about your self-destructive tendencies.
Beyond the windows, the vegetation was shrinking, browning. He said,
When you turned up in Charleston, I went to Charleston.
But I came to you.
Think back to how you first heard about me.
One of the girls in the halfway house recommended you. She told me you'd changed her life, gave me your card.
Her name was Samantha, and I paid her $5,000 to steer you to me.
Jesus, you've been running this grift on me for half a year. But you helped me, you actually helped me.
I'm glad, although that wasn't really the purpose.
I told you everything about me, things nobody else knew.
I wouldn't have had it any other way. I've never taken an interest in anyone with such intensity. I had to know you inside and out, Letty, your secrets and fears. I needed to see your naked soul.
It was a violation.
Yes, but a necessary one.
You were planning Vegas from the beginning?
No, that fell in my lap last month. Vegas was never the end goal.
So what was?
You, meeting you, vetting you, learning everything about you.
I left Charleston and came west on my own. That was my decision.
Was it really? Let's think back to the day you decided to leave. What happened?
A customer harassed me. I fought back. My boss fired me.
Because I paid them to. I wanted you to leave town. You'd been talking about it already. You just needed a push.
You sent me to Isaiah?
In a back channel sort of way. I knew he was planning to rip me off. You might even say I was so unreasonable in my terms that I encouraged it. Isaiah's ambitious and fearless, but he's lucky I didn't leave him in the desert. I figured if he wanted to do the hard work, let him. I had Javier recommend you to him.
So I could get on the inside and you could manipulate me.
So I could manipulate everyone. It's what I do. I took down a casino, kept 100% of the hall, and all I did was drive. And I didn't even have to do that, but I wanted to see you under pressure.
How'd you know I'd ask you to drive us?
I set it up perfectly. I had helped you with your addiction. Here was a chance for you to return the favor. Give me a taste of excitement. Snap me out of my misery. Possibly save my life. Even if you hadn't called, I had alternate plans to catch up with Isaiah's crew. I'd have won no matter what you did, Letty.
Who's the man I stole the phone from?
My face. I have many of them. He's probably breaking it to the crew right now that Isaiah got the better of us. And despite the fact that you tried to rip me off, you're going to get paid, Letty. Won't be $7 million, but it won't be shabby.
What'd you do to Mark?
He's fine. Talented kid. Maid will find him tied up in my suite tomorrow morning. We'll work together at some point in the future.
As I hope you and I will.
The real stars of the show,
he said.
Are your hands. That grab you did in the Wynn Casino was in the top three I've ever seen.
You were there?
I was everywhere. You're an unpolished diamond, Letty.
Is that supposed to be a compliment?
Coming from me, yes. You've got more raw talent than I've ever seen crammed into one person. But you're self-destructive.
I'm fighting it. I'll always be fighting it. You know that.
You're good now,
he said.
But I could make you great.
The road stretched on for miles, a straight shot into hell. It dipped steadily toward a valley floor distorted by heat shimmer. Is that Death Valley? She asked.
Yep. Your purse and phone are in the back seat, by the way.
Letty glanced back, saw her belongings, and then a wall of black duffel bags stacked where the third row seating had been removed.
It's your pride, he said. It's working against you right now. It's whispering, who's this guy to tell me my business?
But he was wrong. She said, you couldn't be more off base.
No.
I'm not perfect, but I'm woman enough to admit when I've had my ass handed to me. I am hurt, though.
You'll get over it. There's this job,
he said.
Yeah? It's a little ways off. You aren't ready yet, but you could be.
As you know, I was on my way to Oregon when I got drawn into all this. There's nothing more important to me than seeing Jacob.
But after that, would you be up for some real work?
Vegas wasn't real enough for you?
My next job makes Vegas look like a child's prank.
It'd be dangerous. You could lose your life. Or spend the rest of it in prison. But if there aren't stakes, what's the fun, right? Might as well rob 7-Elevens.
And if it keeps my mind off using? She let her head rest against the glass, the desert heat pushing through like a plague. Suit up and show up. What exactly are you proposing here? She asked.
I know you now, as well as you know yourself. And I might even trust you. That's all this was ever about. Let me help you take your game to the next level. Let me make you world class.
Are you lonely at the top, is that it?
You're the first person I've met in a long time who might, someday, be able to keep up with me. Just imagine what we could accomplish together.
I'll think about it, she said. So is there a first name you want to let me in on, or do you go by that iconic last? He didn't look over, but he smiled at the windshield as the road ahead dropped toward the lowest point in North America.
No, he said. When I'm with friends, all I answer to is Richter.
A note from Blake Crouch on Grab. Grab is perhaps the best example of how we scoured the three Letty stories that compose this volume to build our show. The first two scenes in Grab feature prominently in the pilot. First, the scene in the diner when Letty gets attacked by a rapey trucker, knees him in the balls, and steals his wallet. And next, the scene of Letty in Christian's office. I actually view the absence of these two scenes in The Pain of Others as a knock against that story. In The Pain of Others, we meet Letty as she's walking into the Grove Park Inn, intending to steal from the guest rooms. Chad Hodge wrote the first 10 pages of the pilot script, and he made the excellent choice to use the diner trucker scene from the first chapter of Grab as the opening scene of our pilot. If you think about it, it's the perfect introduction to Letty. We see her trying to hold down a lousy job, getting shit from her boss. We see her fight back when attacked and glimpse her skill and grit as a survivor. It quickly tells us who Letty is and, hopefully, helps us to immediately fall in love with her. If the pilot episode had begun where The Pain of Others starts, the audience probably wouldn't have been as sympathetic toward Letty, considering she's stealing from hotel rooms by page 3. For me, Letty's therapy scene in Christian's office is one of the great insights into her character, especially the conversation they have about the painting. I was thrilled when that scene translated almost verbatim into the television show. The main plot line of Grab also plays prominently into episode 5 of season 1, with a handful of key changes. The main problem we had with translating Grab into our show was one of tone, always tone. In Grab, Letty goes to Las Vegas and gets involved in a high-stakes takedown of a casino. It involves rappelling out of a high-rise, a scene in a trendy club, and a large, highly skilled crew of criminals ripping off a casino for millions. But the thing is, our show is lo-fi. Our locations are predominantly diners, shitty motels, gas stations, small towns. To suddenly have Letty pulling a job in Vegas would have been a giant violation of our tone, and we definitely didn't want to see her rappelling out of a building. So we kept the concept of Letty lifting a phone and ripping off a casino, but expressed it our way. She only steals a couple hundred thousand. She steals from dumb crooks. At the casino itself looks like nothing you'd find in Sin City. Our amazing production designer Kurt Beach built the casino for episode 5 in the style of a cotton exchange, appropriate for the Savannah, Georgia location. Much of the Christian Letty interactions from Grab and the idea that she brings him into the job fits snugly into the DNA of good behavior. I've heard writers complain when adaptations change their work for the screen, but I don't share that hostility. I love how an idea, a character, a storyline can augment, mature, and deepen as it passes through different media. What I like most about the process of turning a story into a visual medium is that it requires more than just me to see it through. The screenwriter Paul Schrader, Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, said, "Screenplays are invitations to others to collaborate. And if you want to collaborate, then by definition, others are going to bring their ideas and baggage and brilliance to your work." What started as a short story over 7 years ago has become something I could never have created on my own. As much as I enjoy writing novels and stories in the quiet of my office, There's a part of my personality that thrives on creative collaboration, and my life is infinitely richer for all of the amazing actors, directors, and crew who have come together to help make this portrait of a woman named Letty Dobesh. Acknowledgements. Special thanks to my editor at Thomas & Mercer, Jacqueline Ben-Zachary, for her brilliant editorial acumen in helping me to always bring out the best of Letty. Our first project together was Grab, and this collaboration has been one of the most impactful in my career. My literary agent, David Hale Smith, and the gang at Inkwell Management, especially Nathaniel Jacks, Alexis Hurley, and Richard Pine. My film and TV manager, Angela Chain Kaplan, and my entertainment attorney, Joel Vanderklut. The team at Amazon Publishing, especially Shersti Egerdahl, Sarah Funk, Gracie Doyle, Tom Kephart, Hayen Mura, Michaela Bruder, and Jeff Bell. Meredith Jacobson, who did a stellar job copy editing this book. Everyone at TNT Turner, including Kevin Riley, Sarah Aubrey, Sam Linsky, Adrienne O'Ryan, and a special bow to Martine Resnick for her extraordinary efforts and vision to help this project land. Becky Clemens and Marty Adelstein, producing partners extraordinaire. Our entire Wilmington, North Carolina crew for their tireless hours spent at night, in the rain, helping us tell this story. Charlotte Sealing, our pilot director, who set such an amazing bar of poetic noir for all of us to strive for. And finally, my co-writer, co-creator, co-partner in crime, Chad Hodge. It has been quite the ride, my friend.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Good Behavior by Blake Crouch, performed by Julia Whalen and Blake Crouch. Performance copyright 2016 by Brilliance Audio, all rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brilliancedaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.